Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Welcome to episode 34 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Well, today we're going to be talking about her something. This is going to be interesting. And that's the secret life of her fat. Wow. I know you're going to be wanting to sit on the edge of your chair and take a boatload of notes. So it's going to be an awesome episode. Before we start in, I just want to let you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. We really, really read these reviews because we want to hear from you. That exchange is so important to us, so make sure to do that. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
So, the secret life of fat. Well, that turns out to be the name of a brand new book, The Secret Life of Fat, the science behind the body's least understood organ. That's right, it's an organ. And what it means for you. We have with us an expert, Dr. Sylvia Tara. Now, Dr. Tara holds a PhD in biochemistry from the University of California at San Diego. I happen to be a Berkeley person, so I'm going to forgive you for going to San Diego. But there you go, another one of those little University of California things. And an MBA from the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. She is a consultant to science and medical industry and lives in the Los Angeles area. Dr. Tara, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you. So great to be here.
All right. Now, I love this book. Oh, my gosh. First of all, why did you write it? Why did you decide to write The Secret Life of Fat?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I wrote it because I had such a difficult time controlling my fat. I'm one of these people who I don't eat a whole lot, and I do some exercise, but I seem to gain weight incredibly easily. And I had so many experiences where I watched people eat what they want, can do what they want, and they weren't getting fat. And if I tried to do what they did, I would easily gain weight. And on the flip side of that, I watched people, you know, go on a diet and lose 10 pounds, and I would go on the same diet and lose 1 pound. And I finally got so tired of this, and I said, I am going to understand everything there is to know about fat. Why is my fat behaving differently? So I'm a biochemist by background, and I thought if anyone can understand fat, well, surely I can. And I went through about a 4 or 5 year long research period where I read everything in the scientific literature about fat research. I connected with dozens of leading expert scientists around the world who research fat. I talked to doctors of obesity clinics and some of their patients as well. What I found out about fat was so astounding, so surprising, that I thought I have to put this into a book. That was
okay.
Nothing.
Now,
that I
you
thought
said
it was.
Astounding and surprising. So I want to know, right off the bat, I know that this is a topic that is extraordinarily powerful and potent and provocative for women. And women are listening in on the Her podcast. So we want to go to the astounding places. So throw out some of the data that you published in the book that you think women need to know right now that'll really surprise them.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that is important is that if fat is not just fat, it's not just this reserve of calories. It turns out fat is critically important. So fat also is an endocrine organ. It makes and releases hormones that our body depends on. And so because it's so important, nature fights to protect fat. It has all these means to preserve itself. You have to really understand what these are if you really smartly want to fight your fat and try to control your fat. You know, one hormone that fat makes is leptin, and leptin is tied to an increased metabolism. It is tied to satiation. We feel satiated with this. And so when we lose fat, we lose leptin, and we become hungrier. and our metabolism goes down. So after we've lost some weight, we actually have to eat less than before to maintain that lower weight compared to someone that never had to diet to get to that weight to begin with. And that's an important point because I think a lot of us feel really guilty. We feel like we're not doing something right if we have to eat less, if the diet's not working for us. And what I'm hoping my book, The Secret Life of Fat, does is take away some of that guilt. I think if you really start understanding your fat and what's going on, you can manage it. You can take any diet program you like and make it work for you.
Okay. Now, I know that a lot of women are out there probably saying to themselves, oh my gosh, you know, I read that incredible study, you know, in the newspapers, whatever, about the Biggest Losers and how they gained all their fat back and that their metabolism is shot. And what happened with fat? What was the role of fat in all of that? Big question mark. What's your thought?
Yeah, so I think it is because of leptin, right? When we have less leptin, the metabolism's slower and we're hungry. We're driven to gain that fat back. And it's not even just leptin. Our ghrelin level goes up as well. And ghrelin is a hormone secreted by the stomach. And it is directly correlated to hunger. And so, you know, when you think about it, you know, everything's designed to help fat come back. There's even fMRI studies, magnetic resonance imaging studies, looking at brain activity, where they show dieters who've lost weight, they're actually more excited by food than people who are not. And so we're more obsessive about food. We think about it more afterward. And through all of that, you know, just having a lower metabolism, having more hunger, having more thoughts about food, it's designed to come back. That doesn't mean you can't fight it off and you can't maintain your loss. You just have to understand what you're going to feel, how what you have to do to keep that weight off. And I think in this case, knowledge is really power. Once you're aware of what you're going through, amazingly, it helps you stay on the program. I know my editor for the book, he lost 15 pounds after reading my book when I finally delivered it to him, just because he understood why he felt hungry, why hungrier at certain times of day, what his body was doing as the weight was coming off, and he's kept off that weight too.
Well, tell me then, on behalf of all of our wonderful listeners out there, what are some of the most important things, behaviors that a woman must do to be able to maintain any level of weight loss? That now we're going to assume she did it in a healthy way, which means that, you know, there was no draconian, you know, starvation or silliness going on, that there was, you know, the usual paying attention to whole foods, making certain to get physical activity in, stress management to decrease emotional eating, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you maintain it off when nature is fighting to preserve fat?
Yeah, and women particularly have they gain more weight than men. They gain more fat than men. And that's, you know, from the time they're born to the end. Scientific studies show we have more fat, and there's reasons for that. This might help women, you know, think about their fat. One is we partition more nutrients into fat than men do. So when we do partitioning, it's like a 401k account, you know, when you're saving. Part of our nutrients go into fat no matter what. And so if we reduce our calories, there's still a part that's going to go into fat no matter what. Testosterone is another big difference between men and women. So men, just by having testosterone, bust through fat. There's one very interesting study where men were given testosterone and did not exercise. Another group of men were exercising but not given testosterone. Interestingly enough, the men given testosterone who did not exercise built more muscle and lost more fat than men who were exercising. That's how powerful testosterone is. We overall have less of it than men. And so that's another thing at our disadvantage when we're trying to lose weight. But I think, you know, that the things to really think about are, you know, it's what you eat. Diet's really 80% of the ability to lose weight. And I think a lot of weight loss coaches and doctors who run obesity clinics will vouch for that. It's a big part. You know, of course, being smart about it. So eating, like thinking about fat at a scientific level, fighting it at its own game, if you will, if it's going to, you know, release hormones and respond to hormones, how does this knowledge help us lose weight? Well, I mean, one is, of course, insulin, which is written about quite a bit. So insulin clears our blood of nutrients and it packs them into fat. And, you know, we're a little hungrier because of it. That's been written about in several books. So I think we have to watch, you know, how much sugary foods we eat, how much carbs we eat. But there's more than just insulin. And this is where the secret life of fat differs. Secret Life of Fat, I also address other hormones that are fat-busting and what we can do to promote them. Growth hormone is one. Now, as we age, we have less growth hormone, but there's ways to extend growth hormone release. One is intermittent fasting, so just extending the non-eating period before we go to bed. Our growth hormone levels peak at night, so if you stop eating just a bit before, you know, say 5 o'clock or so, don't eat again until 10 o'clock the next day, you actually are increasing your growth hormone levels, and that'll help you bust fat. You know, I use intermittent fasting, and that's helped me. That's been the biggest component of me being able to lose 30 pounds and keep it off. And the other one is testosterone. So we can increase our testosterone levels, and exercise will help do that. Some of it's strenuous exercise, like leg presses and squats, you know, doing like, say, 4 sets of 8 each. Scientifically, that is shown to release testosterone, as well as long bouts of aerobic activity. So I think if we get a little smarter about our fat, that's going to help a lot. We're eating for hormones, as well as eating for our bacteria and our gut. That's another thing that can help. Not all of us get the same calories out of food. Depending on your microbiome, those bacteria in your gut, you might be getting more or less calories out of your food. So adding things that can counter that, adding more fiber, things that are very hard for our bacteria to digest, things that will pass more as waste, can actually help lose weight. So I think there's those two, fat and activity. And the third component, to complete my fat acronym, F-A-T, is training your brain, really training it to just stay on. Habits are a really powerful component of any diet. So even if the diet was to eat cake 3 times a day, that'd actually be hard to stay on for a month because sometimes I'd want something else. So no matter what diet, you have to really, you know, build the habit to stay on it. And I think the more you do it, and I give some exercises in my book to build habit, the more that's also going to help you with whatever plan that you want to use to lose the weight.
Interesting. And what about people who have, you know, if you look around at the numbers today, you're well aware that the incidence of obesity is exponentially increasing, especially among certain groups. You now have people on average who have 50 pounds or more to shed to be able to get within a healthy range. I mean, when I say a healthy range, just based upon the criteria that we have today. So if you're looking at that 50-pound thing, and if you look at someone who has been bouncing all over the rafters, they've been yo-yo dieting, as it were, for years, what's been going on with their fat stores and fat in general among the people, the grand majority of people, especially women, who have made it a second career to bounce in and out of diets of all kinds of, you know, ilk? What happens with metabolism and fat in people like that?
Yeah, I think you just described me.
I think and you and everybody else out there, man, you know.
I think that was me. I mean, I write about this in my book. I've been dieting since I was 12. I've been going up and down. I've been yo-yo dieting. And, you know, I think after a couple of kids and I gained enough weight that, you know, I really had to learn how to smartly control it. But, you know, what happens is that yo-yo dieting, it plays with our hormone levels. It plays with leptin. Our metabolism is slower now because fat gets very smart. In fact, the more you diet, it seems the smarter your fat will get. And so the way to really tackle that is just really to have the willpower and the stick-to-itiveness. It's going to be harder for you to lose that weight than it will be for someone who, for the first time, has gained 10 pounds they have to lose. So really don't despair, right? You're going to be a little hungrier. You know, you might have to reduce your calories more because, as I said, we need less calories after we diet. We need less calories than someone who's naturally at that lower weight to begin with. And it's because our muscles have gotten smarter, our metabolism is slower, and much of it's due to the loss of leptin once we've lost weight. And that effect persists for years. It doesn't go away right after you diet and lose weight, and a month later you're normal. It actually lasts for years. And so weight maintenance will be just as hard as losing it the first time. So you have to know once you lose weight, it's going to be hard. You have to stick to it. But even after the weight's gone, you can't bounce back. You still are going to have to eat a little bit less than people around you who didn't have to lose the weight. You might have to exercise a bit more because your metabolism's slower. And so, you know, you can do it. And I think it's really just a matter of habits and knowledge about your fat, knowledge about what your body is doing in response to a diet.
So many women out there I know say, I'm just a wreck. I mean, I'm 50 years old, and I've been at this since I was flipping 10. And so I've got 40 years of a disaster. I've been roller coastering all over the planet, and I'm sure that my metabolism is shot. So why even try? What do you say to someone like that?
You know, what really moved me, and I'll just, you know, a little personal story, is everyone has these things they splurge on. I splurge on beautiful dresses. That was always my thing. And I had these beautiful dresses in my closet that wouldn't fit me. And I thought, you know, I'm not getting younger. I'm coming to a time where I might never get into that dress again. And it made me so determined to get into that dress. And so use your emotions in this. It's not shot. It's not over. Channel everything you have and get determined, angry even, about getting rid of that fat. You are in charge of your fat. Your fat's not in charge of you. And so that story you told me about all women, hey, that's me. You know, that was definitely me. And, you know, I just got very determined enough to do research for 5 years, learn everything about fat, and learn how to apply it. What I try to do is distill it in the simplest way possible. Is I actually talk about fat through stories of patients and scientists to make it readable, very understandable for people. But it's accomplishable. You have to stay on it. You have to understand your fat. I think once you accept, I'm not like normal people, I'm not like my husband, I'm not like my neighbor who can eat what they want, I am different because I've yo-yo dieted, possibly because of your genetics, and I write about all the other ways we get fat too. It's not just sloth and gluttony. Genetics has a component, gender does, the bacteria we harvest do, and also our hormones do. There's many reasons you get fat. So remove the guilt about fat. You know, originally you might have gotten it by eating too much, but the ways it's staying on you might not have to do with that. And I think if you remove guilt and just intellectually go about this, you can start accepting the differences about yourself. And you know, once you do that, sorry, go ahead.
What I'm trying to think about is this. If a woman is out there in her podcast land and she's sitting there saying, okay, let me just get this straight. Okay. I am like the grand majority of women, this woman is saying. And she's saying, well, now I've been all over the planet. I've been on so many diets. I've done Weight Watchers. I've done them all and back and forth. And now I find myself in a place where, once again, I'm 50 pounds overweight, I'm going to be facing this issue of, okay, I'm going to empower myself. I'm going to learn about the fat. I'm going to read this fabulous book, and I'm going to, you know, really be bound and determined to shed enough fat so that I can really optimize my health and wellness. But then once I've shed it, I have to maintain that. And in order to maintain that, I'm going to have, for all intent and purposes, a leptin gap, right? So you have leptin associated with the fat cells. Since you've dropped, let's just say the person dropped 40 pounds of excess fat fuel. The fat cells are still there. The fat fuel is not. So we got little collapsed balloons everywhere. And when that took place, the leptin stores decreased. And one, correct me if I'm wrong, but the leptin stores decrease to really prompt nature to have us gain that weight back because we, you know, fat is very valuable, but things got a little bit deranged because nature never wanted you to be 50 pounds overweight. Certainly if you were running around foraging and hunting, because that's not going to, you know, help the situation. And so now you've got this leptin gap that you say may take years to rectify, if it does at all. And so during that period of time, you may feel a little bit more hungry. Because of the leptin gap, you will have to eat less than the guy next to you. That's a tough sell. It's a tough sell. And so your solution to this is to really get much more in touch with why you're doing this in the first place. You mentioned the beautiful dresses. Other people have other you know, reasons and motivations to do their thing. I think a lot of people don't get in touch with their motivations to be able to, you know, keep this whole thing going. But physiologically, that leptin gap is a tough one. And if I'm correct, the ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone, stays elevated for quite some time too, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So right. You get a double whammy.
Yeah,
you know, you get a double whammy. The lower leptin levels, you know, which take a long, long time to rectify, are kind of pushing appetite, whereas hunger is definitely getting pushed too. It's a tough one. How did you get through that, you yourself? Because in reading your book, I mean, that was your story. How did you actually get through it?
Yeah, so there has to be something you want more than the food on your plate. There has to be a motivation. You hit that right on the head. And in fact, studies show, you know, that study of successful dieters, those studies, that people had a serious motivation. A lot of them had a medical diagnosis. You know, they were getting diabetes. They were getting sick. Sometimes it was just looking at themselves in the mirror, seeing a photo of themselves where they were heavier than others. That emotional trigger, you know, got them to take their diet seriously. You know, if you're just waffling around like, oh, yeah, I feel like going on a diet, you're not serious about it, it's more likely to fail than if there's something truly making you want to lose that weight. And, you know, superficial or not, the trigger for me is I want to fit into my clothes again. You know, I don't want to throw out all these beautiful clothes I bought. I want to wear them and look good in them. It actually kept me going every day. So I think you have to use what's important to you. And once you have that motivation, though, there's nothing that can stop you from losing weight. And I write my own story in there. I mean, fat became no match for my willpower in the end. I wanted it at a certain level, and that was that. It is hard, though. I mean, I do skip dinner sometimes. It makes date night kind of hard. But again, there's something I want more than food on my plate. And I think you have to reckon with yourself honestly. If that's not the case, you like to eat and you don't mind a few pounds, then that's your reality for you. But, you know, at the time, if you do get a diagnosis or you come to a bridge where that's not what you want, that motivation will be the thing that fuels you through the harder times.
Wow. You know, this is quite interesting. So let me throw something else up to you. Is fat different in men and women? In other words, are men and women born with different number of fat cells in certain parts of the body, and is that why they end up looking the way they do?
Well, definitely women have more fat than men, and we deposit it differently, so we have it more in our thighs and our buttocks, and men have it more in their gut, and as we age, that starts to change. Women actually will start to get more in their gut as well because the estrogen levels are changing. So some of it is genetic. But, you know, getting back to how we think about food, there is a difference between men and women there, and I write about this as well. It's dichotomous thinking, which is higher in women. And what that means is that women tend to have more guilt about failure. So if they go off their diet, they feel like they failed, and there's no point in going on it anymore. In fact, I spoke to a few personal trainers and other even doctors at the weight loss clinic. They observed this, that when women come off the diet, they just feel like it's, you know, they fail, they might as well eat all day. Whereas if men come off the diet, they're like, yeah, I had a beer, I felt like it, and they just get back on. So the failure rate is less. And I think if women can control that, you know, it's not all lost because you had candy. I've got a great sweet tooth, and I give in once in a while. I just don't do it every day, or I do it in very small amounts. And I think approaching some of the psychological difference between us as well will help women. I think get rid of the guilt, you know, get rid of feeling like you failed a whole bunch of times. There's no point in trying, you know, get on. And if you do go off, just get back on and keep going with it.
Well, now you talk about some intermittent fasting that you've done. What kind of food do you eat during the day, and how do you deal with the issue of treats? Are there certain foods that you just tend to avoid because they're just too troublesome for you? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, so I keep a log of what I eat, especially when I'm trying to lose weight. And you know, I start to notice correlations of what makes me gain and what doesn't. When do I lose weight, and what was a different thing that I did? And so if what's worked really well for me is extending that overnight fast. And, you know, when I was dieting, I was pretty hardcore. I was very determined. And I think I ate between 10 and 3 for a few weeks at a time at least, especially when I hit a plateau. I'll put the gas pedal on much further. And what I eat during that time, you know, it got down to what I diagnosed in myself. So I think genetics were hampering me. My mother is like this. She also cannot eat very much. And I think I got that genome. And also, you know, bacterial distribution. I had been eating more sweets and carbs. It was probably tilted more towards fat gain. I'm female. I am middle aged, so my hormones were going down. And so I knew this was going to be quite a fight. I had a number of things working against me. And so I ate for lunch a very large salad and I with some meat on it and enough fat on it, too. I would put on a nice thick dressing. I would make sure I was satiated once a day to get through. I might have a little bit of, you know, whole wheat and some protein for breakfast and then maybe a snack again at around 3, something small, not more than a couple hundred calories. And that worked for me. I would leave out carbohydrates as much as possible. And it was interesting what I found. Some things would make me gain, some things I could get away with. I could get away with chocolate, but I couldn't get away with a chocolate cookie. So something in white flour definitely was there. I could have sugar in small amounts and actually not gain weight. There's this excellent research coming out of Weizmann Institute where they looked at blood sugar response in response to foods of a number of people, and they found that some people will get a spike in their blood sugar after eating certain carbs, and some people won't. So we're all individual, and I think you have to individualize your diet plan for you. And the more you use food logging, really being attentive, and just modulating your diet for what you can accommodate will help you stay on a path that works for you. And ultimately, your diet has to work for you biologically. We're all a little different biologically. And I think in my book, I try to really, you know, describe those different elements, you know, of what makes a person gain or lose. But also psychologically, there's certain things we can withstand or not. And then socially, depends on what our social lives are. Psychologically, for me, I really like to have a sweet once in a while. So these diets that are saying absolutely no sugar at all, I'm probably not going to stay on it for the long run. You know, socially, I'm at a point, my kids are older, I can get away with not eating dinner, they're not offended at me. So they thought it was weird at first. But, you know, socially, if you're a busy executive who has to have dinners all the time with people, you might want to change your fast if you're going to do it to different hours of the day. So those three components, the biology, psychology, you know, the lifestyle factors have to come together to make a diet work long term.
Good Lord, this is just fantastic. I want to make sure everyone knows that we have been talking to Dr. Sylvia Tara, and she is the author of The Secret Life of Fat, The Science Behind the Body's Least Understood Organ and What It Means for You. Her website is thesecretlifeoffat.com, and she has just really dedicated herself to understanding the A to Z on all things fat as an organ system, and has graciously also written about and now has described on our podcast her own personal journey with weight, because, hey, she's a woman. Hey, you're women out there. And we've been through this back and forth and up and down so many different times. Isn't it about time we sort of stopped, took a breath, learned a lot more about this extraordinary organ system we call fat? And once we do that, don't work against it. Work with it to be able to achieve your goal. All right, this is Dr. Tara. Thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast. Your words of wisdom, your knowledge, and sharing your personal story have meant everything to us. And we're really encouraging everyone to get on out there and get your book. Thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast.
Thank you. It was wonderful to be here.
Awesome. Well, listen, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. That's because we want to attract so many more people just like you. And that happens only when you take time to rate it. We want to hear your review, too. I read those things. So please make sure to leave us a review as well. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakMD, and you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.